You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, today I spoke to Green MP Golriz Gharaman. We first started off by discussing the Greens' proposal to increase the Best Start payment by 50% and also extend its eligibility. For our focus on foreign affairs, we also discussed issues with the immigration system and the Greens' involvement in holding international powers to account for human rights abuses. Here is that interview. The Green Party announced that it's supporting doubling the Best Start payment, which would make it available for children under 3 years old. How would this increase from $69 to $140 help address poverty here in Aotearoa?
Yeah, first of all, our approach with all of our election packages, and this one sits within our guaranteed minimum income ending poverty package, is that the government must have a role in ending hardship and addressing the climate crisis, that all of the decisions of government sit squarely in terms of the ways that New Zealanders experience the world. And so we know that 1 in 10 children in Aotearoa are growing up in poverty. For Māori, that's 1 in 5. And often people kind of talk about, what does that mean? Well, that's actually based on very real indicators. Like, do you have a second pair of shoes? Do you have more than 2 hot meals per week? These are real indicators of poverty, and there's absolutely no reason for any child in Aotearoa to be experiencing this. So we have a fully costed policy that would double the Best Start payment to 140, and it would make it universally available to all children under 3 years of age. Those are critical years. We've heard this from the Children's Commissioner for years. We've heard it from health professionals, and we say, just as every person in New Zealand in their later years deserves to have universal support, that should apply to children as well. And child poverty is absolutely costing us in every possible way in our communities. Whether you care about the bottom line, it's costing our healthcare system later on, it's costing us in mental health care later on, in terms of education. And so there is an easy solution to this. We would pay for it with our wealth tax that applies to only 0.7% of the top wealth holders in Aotearoa. And it would make a very, very real difference for whānau.
So this week, National and New Zealand First both announced various penalties for those on the JobSeeker support benefit, which ACT has also supported. What impact do you think these policies would have on low-income earners?
Well, I mean, first of all, they're devastating and cruel, especially in the midst of a global financial crisis, I would call it, but certainly a cost of living crisis in New Zealand. They would absolutely punish people struggling and in absolute need of a social safety net. But in particular, they would be punishing children and young people. It's beyond cruel to say that we, as a government, would witness hardship and turn to punishing people who are experiencing that hardship instead of supporting them. So it shows what the next government could be, which is one that would make things harder for most New Zealanders, or one that would approach the great crises of our time with not only compassion, but evidence-based policies.
How would the Greens then aim to help people get off the benefit and not have to rely on support from benefits and into meaningful and sustainable employment?
Well, first of all, not everyone on our welfare system is on the job seeker benefit. I mean, we have people who are sole carers of children who shouldn't be sanctioned and pushed into work rather than supported to raise those children as best they can to join society and to join the next generation, to go to school and to thrive later on. We have people on sickness and disability benefits who would be sanctioned and pushed into work or pushed to prove over and over again that they in fact can't work rather than be supported to be employed in whatever way they want to and can be safely, but also to just actually have a safe, secure income that would put food on the table and pay the rent. So actually the welfare system isn't there to punish and push people into employment rather than to actually see what each welfare beneficiary in fact needs, but also what our communities need. What I would say the guaranteed minimum income, which is $385 for every single person who needs it, plus things like the Best Start payment and payments for children or for carers of children to raise those children in a way that's safe and healthy, would mean is that actually people can have food on the table, have a warm, dry home, and work if they can. We would raise the abatement limit to $60,000, which means that people who do go into employment part-time, which is what people need to get your confidence back after, for example, being the primary caregiver of a child and out of work for some time or out of work for whatever reason, you would need to be able to start work part-time without being penalised or pushed off the benefit immediately. And we would make the first $10,000 of anyone's income in New Zealand tax-free. So to make it safe for people to start work and to go into employment without being punished off the benefit is to us the absolute best way to ease people into the workforce without losing their guaranteed income, which is in the welfare system. That isn't currently happening. People are having to choose between going into work part-time and losing their benefits or staying on the benefit, which we all know is below the poverty line, suffering, sinking further and further into poverty, and we know what that means for every single other part of our society, whether it's health, whether it's justice, whether it's education, it's absolutely harmful.
Yeah, we have to move on to our next topic, which we also saw that Labor has recently announced it would ensure amnesty for Pacific migrant workers who have overstayed their visas. What do you think about Labor's approach to addressing this issue?
Well, we've been pushing for some time for safe and appropriate amnesties for so-called overstayers. We had 3 years ago Pacific community leaders and migrant groups launching a petition asking for an amnesty for overstayers and pathways to residency. So finally, we're glad to see Labor doing something, but it absolutely doesn't go far enough. So Labor's policy that was just announced was an amnesty for those who've been in Aotearoa for 10 years or more, which is fine. That is as it should be, but it doesn't recognise the realities of our immigration system, which is to say that we very often keep people in essential work. I mean, we're talking about people working in our healthcare system, caring for our elderly, building infrastructure on low incomes that don't meet the residency pathways that are provided for in our immigration system. You often have to earn a certain amount to be able to apply for residency or permanent residency and get that pathway to citizenship. We keep people on low incomes within the immigration work visa system, even though they're filling essential roles, and those people are often one job loss away from becoming deemed an overstayer. They would have often been here for years, although it may be less than a decade, which is the limit that Labor has set, but they'll often have been here for 6 or 7 years. They'll have potentially children who are in the education system here. We saw when COVID happened and there were job losses that those on work visas didn't receive, for example, the COVID-created supplement. And often that makes migrants reliant on very exploitative employment situations. But we know that when a job loss does happen for a migrant worker who may have been here for years, that immediately puts them into that extreme risk category of being an overstayer, makes them far more vulnerable to exploitation. And that is the focus of our universal amnesty and coupled with the safe pathways to residency. So unless we're going to provide migrants with safe, dignified pathways and support to integrate here. We can't punish them for suddenly becoming overstayers despite their best efforts to actually seek residency. Often people don't know that once they get here, they can keep renewing their work visa and keep doing these essential roles that we need, but that they will never be allowed to settle because we deem them to be too low in terms of earnings.
So the Green Party would support Labor's call to have it be 10 years?
We support that only in that it provides some relief for some of those who need it, but it absolutely needs to go further and recognise that these gaps are in our system and that all overstayers, so-called overstayers, need to have the security of pathways to residency. There's no one here who has not come here to fill an essential work visa role. That's who we're talking about. We're talking about migrant workers who are here doing work that we have on the job shortage list, or students who are funding our higher education system. And within weeks or days of something happening, a course finishing, a job loss, they become overstayers, and then suddenly in that panic, they become very vulnerable to exploitation and may remain here for years, even doing that same job, but in a really vulnerable position. And so unless we're going to actually recognise that we need to fix our immigration system and make pathways for residency far more accessible, we can't continue to punish people.
And just lastly, in this term of government, we have seen New Zealand condemn international powers like Israel, Iran, Russia and China for human rights abuses that they are committing. What role has the Greens had in holding these powers to account compared to other parties?
Well, to my mind, the government's actually been fairly slow in joining international calls to condemn mass atrocities and other human rights violations. So in terms of what's happening in Iran with the Women Life Freedom Movement and the murder of Mahsa Amini, the young Kurdish woman who was killed by forces for showing too much hair, which is what Iranian women are dealing with right now, we were months behind in condemning that regime. We did end up condemning the regime in our UN forums, but we didn't create a special personalised sanctions regime against the leaders of that nation. And I'm not talking about trade sanctions, but I'm talking about the kind of sanctions that we created when the war in Ukraine broke out. That is to say that we had named oligarchs, defence force members and members of the Russian government as people who are most responsible for those atrocities in Ukraine, and made it unlawful for New Zealand to hold funds, to allow travel and to do business in terms of both the private and public sector with those named individuals. That's what other nations have done when it comes to Iran, and the New Zealand government has sustained its refusal to do that. So we've done a little bit. We haven't quite done enough, and I think the other example that's really meaningful to me as an area where we fall short is that, for example, when the Taliban took over Afghanistan, we absolutely refused to create a special visa category for at-risk Afghans, whereas we did create a 4,000 special visa category for Ukraine, and we did that rightly. It was for family members of Ukrainian New Zealanders. It probably didn't go far enough in that we didn't facilitate their travel, but for Afghanistan, even though there was a massive displacement crisis, all we did was to issue some public statements, but we didn't in fact stand with the people of Afghanistan. And you know, just even today, I've done interviews on the 20 children from Afghanistan, 20, that's a tiny handful that we did resettle here in the fall of Kabul, but that Immigration New Zealand are refusing to reunite with their parents. So to say that New Zealand is the, you know, the independent principled voice that we'd like to be isn't super true anymore. You know, we're not the nation of the Tampa boat resettlement when we came to aid the boat with people from the Middle East, Afghanistan and other places that had just suffered atrocities when Australia refused them, when we are currently refusing to reunite 20 young people with literally their immediate family, which is all they're asking for.
So just quickly then, why is it important to have the Greens, and you would hope from the Greens you would want to be in government potentially, but even in Parliament, to ensure equitable condemnation of these atrocities that are going on?
Well, it has only been with Greens asking these questions that we even got the condemnation of Iran. It was only with Greens in government that we pushed for the other really important foreign affairs issue this term, which was the COVID vaccine. And New Zealand was incredibly late to supporting the lifting of intellectual property costs on the COVID vaccine, which third world nations were calling for. It was only after repeated questions in the House and in Select Committee that the government actually joined that international call. But I would also say that it has only ever been the Greens in successive governments that have lifted the voices of those that are most marginalised. So for us, having Palestinian statehood in our manifesto this term will mean that in government we may finally join the three quarters of the world's nations who recognise Palestine, who do stand with displaced people by redoubling our refugee quota, which is, again, our policy, and actually being a good citizen of the world, even though we are very far away.
And that was the Green Party's Gulruz Gariman discussing granting amnesty to migrant workers who have overstayed their visas, issues with the immigration system, and condemning international powers for human rights abuses.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.